You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 410 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the
Super
Bowl 48
champion. It's Kevin's birthday edition of the Pelton Cast.
It is my birthday. I thought of it as the Nate McMillan episode of the podcast.
Just for the number 10, what does the 4 have to do with it? 410 is literally your birthday.
I agree, but that's how we've been doing it. It's not like...
Yeah, but this one, we have all the numbers.
All right, fair. I just had a story to tell about Nate McMillan.
Okay. Oh, it's the Nate McMillan edition?
Yeah, thanks for playing along, finally.
Well, you didn't tell me that.
when I mentioned it, I thought you could go along with it. I was at the Women's Regionals in Portland this weekend, as you know.
Uh-huh.
North Carolina State advanced
to
the Final Four. Portland?
Of Portland. the state.
Not a state. Portland.
The state that Portland is in. We'll talk about that beer you're drinking, too.
We will talk about that in a second. North Carolina State advanced to the Final Four, both men's and women's.
Yes, famously, Nate McMillan's alma mater.
Went on Sunday, and the color analyst for the North Carolina State women's basketball games, who was in the media section, like the press conference availabilities all weekend, was a backcourt mate of Nate McMillan's, overlapped with him both years that Nate McMillan played at Raleigh.
Well, there you go.
So,
where is Nate McMillan at now?
I think he's spending more time in Seattle now that he is not coaching in the NBA.
Really?
So,
all right.
There you go.
Happy that he's out of the state of Oregon. For him.
Well, really contentious for the state of Oregon right away. And as you say, poor timing for me to be drinking from our friends at Backwoods Brewing, which I assume is in Oregon, although
from
I have no
Oregon!
Not officially. It's not the official beer of the Kraken here, okay? So first off.
Wouldn't be shocked.
It's the Rip City Remix IPA, which I was able to, thanks to friend of the pod, Reggie Walker, for offering this up when I interviewed him on Friday in the Blazers' offices. It's game time with Rip City Remix, spinning our classic IPA into something new using experimental hops for a slam dunk of flavors, including cherry, melon, and citrus. The Remix, the Blazers G League team, wrapping up their inaugural season.
I would say that you're name dropping, but I'm not clear on who you're name dropping right now.
I'm an employee of the Remix.
What is the Remix?
That's their G League team.
Oh, okay.
That's why, did you not notice that the logo looks like the Blazers logo? Because it's...
I mean, I got that.
Yeah.
The Remix is the Blazers G League team?
Correct.
I'm learning all sorts of new things.
You used to be a Blazers fan.
It was really a complex name drop. You got it in there.
I don't even think it was a name drop. It's more an explanation. But anyways, a delightful IPA. So the first of those I've had on the pod in a while. All right, let's begin our toast this week with an update on our bracket pools. On the men's side, I'm tied for first, but have no points remaining, is none of the teams that I picked to make the Final Four have advancing, so I have no chance of winning. If UConn wins the national championship, third Pelton brother Nate Taggart will win. If Purdue wins, it's there's no I in winning, which I think might be long-suffering Purdue fan Mike Bape, but unclear because, as I mentioned on the Discord, it doesn't have people's usernames. And if Tennessee wins, it's naturally in Rick Barnes we trust. Bringing home the championship. If NC
Tennessee?
State...
Isn't Tennessee eliminated?
Oh, yeah, they are eliminated.
What? How many teams do you think are in the Final Four?
This is a great
you
question.
You have five options of teams right here.
This is a compelling point. I don't know.
How many times do we have to do this weekly now that you forget something that happened recently? This might not be a podcast. This might be an intervention. If Tennessee wins, I was like,
you know, I went to the
if
pool.
Tennessee wins, we have a problem.
Or a miracle. Could be either way.
God.
I don't know if you saw this, that UConn was stuck in stores all night.
Oh, no.
That they finally were able to fly out after, I want to say, like after midnight Eastern, because their plane had issues.
It was a plane having issues, not weather. The weather's crazy over
it
there.
It was definitely the plane and not weather.
I love that I'm like so deeply
okay,
unaware.
Okay, so it must be that In Rick Barnes, we trust.
Could win if no one wins?
If Alabama and North Carolina State play in the final, In Rick Barnes, we trust has one of those teams in it and wins. I was just thrown by the fact that they have the Tennessee logo and did not process that obviously they had been eliminated.
Okay, fair enough. You're creating scenarios. My favorite thing, my favorite exchange that we had happen over the weekend, because now that I'm not on Twitter, I'm just like trying to avoid fascism, of course. And for you, you're like, you need to get back on Twitter ASAP! This message. And I'm like, holy shit, what is going on Twitter? Because I called you while a women's basketball game was going on.
That I was covering, not just going on. I was in attendance.
You were like, just that you need to get back on Twitter ASAP. And I'm like, oh my God.
You were having a moment during the Iowa-LSU game.
You weren't at the Iowa-LSU game.
I agree, and I obviously wasn't tweeting about it. So it's quit Twitter. Okay, but so the rest of the world was having a moment.
And then I said, what's happening on there? And your response was, women's basketball talk. I was just like, that is your reason that I need to get back on Twitter ASAP is just women's basketball talk?
People dunking on Kim Mulkey, primarily.
I was like, I really deeply thought something very exciting or terrible had happened. You're like, it's just women's basketball talk.
This is actively at back game on here covering
ASAP.
I don't know why.
Stop everything you're doing. I threw my phone down and got back on Twitter.
I mean, ASAP is capitalized as an acronym. I don't know how else you want
all
me to
I found
it.
Was women's basketball talk.
Well, speaking of the women's tournament, I win that bracket if South Carolina beats UConn in the final. Mark Stewart wins if UConn wins. Randy wins if Iowa wins. That being, of course, third development brother, Talking Taco Time co-host Randy Cote. And one of the Aarons wins if South Carolina beats Iowa. We have multiple Aarons, so I'm not clear again. You're going to have to let me know if you win which of you it is. And if both Aaron Robertson and Aaron Jazz claim that they were the winner, then I'll have no idea. I'll have to mail both of you cookies.
Split Aaron decision.
Alrighty, congrats to UW Softball's Riley Holtorf, named Pac-12 Player of the Week, and Freshman of the Week pitcher Sydney Peters. Both played key roles Saturday as the Huskies completed a weekend sweep of Oregon State
there it is.
In a 1-0 thriller. We'll talk more about that when we get to that section of the pod. And lastly this week, I'm pouring some out because it is a farewell to Will Conroy, who announced last week he will not return after 9 seasons as an assistant coach at UW, beginning under his former head coach, Lorenzo Romar, and continuing through all of Mike Hopkins' tenure. Okay, the shrug is just not great radio.
I was about to... women's basketball talk.
People want women's basketball talk.
I'm not complaining about the women's basketball talk. It was more just the urgency.
No, I just want you to not bug me while I'm busy.
I would have always been on Twitter.
I think at some point in
you
the
think
ensuing...
I was like, oh, I'm going to call Kevin, but just let me pull up Twitter first to see if there might be some women's basketball talk
I think at
going
some point
on.
In the ensuing 2 hours, you might have seen a comment on LSU and Iowa. It was dominating the conversation.
I'm blissfully unaware of basically everything going on in the world, though.
Okay.
I did see this Will Conroy news, though, and
that cracked your radar.
And well, I dropped in. I've been way too busy to be on the Discord. Even it's very annoying. Which, by the way, if you're listening and not on the Discord, what even are you doing?
It's a great question. The Mariners discussion. It's like how I'm following them. We'll talk about that later. But like the Mariners section of the Discord is how I learn most things about the Mariners at this point, because I was covering women's basketball all weekend.
You need to get back on Twitter ASAP.
Oh, apparently the UConn plane is just took off 5 minutes ago.
Oh, wow.
There you go. That's the live updates.
Okay. I think this is fine, though, with Will Conroy. Again, it's sad to see him go. Love Will Conroy. He's awesome. Who knows? This might not be the last time that he coaches at the University of Washington.
And that's sort of what he implied in his farewell message, that he needed to go somewhere else to earn the credibility. He obviously wanted to be the head coach after Mike Hopkins was let go. The players wanted him to be elevated to head coach. I don't think it was ever particularly seriously considered.
I think UW made the right decision in the situation in the same way that they made the right decision with the football team and not elevating Ryan Grubb. And then Ryan Grubb ended up back in our lives shortly thereafter.
So you're saying the Sonics are going to hire Will Conroy. Or if,
I don't care who the head coach is.
Rip City Remix.
Rip City Remix. They are not in Seattle. Are you kidding me? Do it. Look, I know I had to educate you on that there are only four teams in the Final Four, but I'm assuming that the Rip City Remix, where do they play? Do they play in Portland also?
They play at the Child Center on the University of Portland campus, but there's an outside chance they could someday play outside of the state of Oregon. They could hypothetically someday play in the COOF.
Okay, that's fine. We still would not be claiming them. For the record, the COOF is not Seattle and not where Will Conroy is from.
Dan Dickow and Richie Fromm would be the hometown heroes.
Jonathan Stewart.
Who's Jonathan Stewart from, like, Lacey?
I think further south.
Okay.
Timberline High School, right?
I know Timberline High School. I just am not sure where it is off the top of my head.
But I think it's partially just it's good for Will Conroy to go get coaching experience elsewhere and for Danny Sprinkle to build his own staff. So I think kind of both of those things being true, this makes sense to me, and it wasn't something that I was bummed about.
That is Lacey. I was bummed about it. The explanation I've heard secondhand is, you know, if you're coming in and trying to change the culture as a new head coach, that's more difficult to do when you have existing coaches on the roster. Now, my counterargument to this was, do you think Will Conroy agreed with everything Mike Hopkins was doing? Because I think the odds are very low that was the case.
No, I'm not saying that it's more like the players have an allegiance already to Will Conroy. Danny Sprinkle needs the players to rally around Danny Sprinkle. Does that make sense?
I don't think they were going to be divided in that regard.
There's always going
to
be a divide.
And also, this is assuming that players who were on the roster last year are going to be on the roster next year, which is a big leap to take.
I think you kind of just have to trust in the process with Danny Sprinkle and the success that he's had. Will Conroy doesn't have that. Will Conroy is an assistant, and he hasn't been an assistant on a successful team yet. So,
I mean, the 2019 UW team was as successful as this Utah State team was. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
He achieved consistent success in that same sort of way that Danny Sprinkle has. So I think ultimately it's a little bit about maybe there's a step back for a second, but it's a step forward long term. And ultimately, I think Danny Sprinkle, I think he's going to bring in a bunch of players and coaches. I think this team is going to look more like the teams at Utah State than the University of Washington did last year.
There's not a lot of UW players who have submitted notifications of transfers yet, which is interesting. So we'll discuss that later in the pod when we get to the full transact section.
I mean, there's one player who matters.
There's more than one player who matters. There's one player we care about more than any others.
Who else matters?
Which is funny because he didn't start until like the last weekend of the
report. And was like pretty good. Who else is even coming back that...
I mean, a lot of guys still have eligibility. Frank Kepnong, Braxton Mia. So, you know, those players. Wilhelm Breidenbach.
Oh, I want Breidenbach back.
You want Breidenbach.
Yeah.
That's what you mean. What I would say, though, is from a PR standpoint here, this is Danny Sprinkle taking a considerable risk. Because if things don't go well next season and you don't have popular alumni on the staff, then I think that is going to open you up to some criticism. The honeymoon period is not as long as people would like to think it is. Sometimes in the case of the Mariners, the honeymoon period never exists at all.
What is honeymoon from what? Missing the playoffs? They had a whole fucking season of honeymoon. They're just like straight into it. What honeymoon are you talking about? Literally.
I mean, there was.
They're honeymooning from the 2001 season still.
Jorge Polanco's honeymoon period.
Let's talk about cookies.
All right, let's talk about cookies.
Something more positive than the Mariner. You had to go there to that team.
You were searching for New York's best cookie last weekend.
I did a little bit of searching. I went to one cookie place, but kind of a pop-in cookie place. It was Levain Bakery. I went in Manhattan while I was there. I took.
I like how you said that as if it was like an obscure place.
Suburb
to Manhattan. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I successfully rode the subway three times. Not once, not twice, but thrice.
You did call me to brag about it.
I feel like only Peltoncast listener would understand why I would brag about successfully navigating travel. Because I'm just like, look, if they give me an east, west, north, or south, I'm screwed.
No, dear. I got to admit, you know, this is... New York is tough for me because I'm used to orienting everything to the water.
It's like probably the easiest place to navigate.
There's water on both sides. I can't do it. I guess that's only in Manhattan.
I've figured out that there is an L train that goes back and forth between Brooklyn and Manhattan. So successfully conquered that. Anyway, I went to Levain Bakery. There was a line out the door. It was a pretty significant line at the Levain Bakery. Levain, there are a handful of locations. And it's a little bit more, I would say.
So you went to the original location.
Is that, I mean...
74th Street.
There must be more, and I don't know whether I went to 74th Street or not.
It's the one on the Upper West Side.
I'm pretty sure that's the one that I went to.
Okay.
I've always wanted to see a monument when I travel. I saw no glimpse of anything in the state. I saw not.
You did say you've never done anything touristy in New York, was basically what you said, right?
Yeah, one time.
You said you saw the Statue of Liberty when
I've
you were
seen
in Brooklyn.
It from the plane.
Oh, from the plane.
Yes, that is where I have done every tourist, literally any time.
Your favorite tourist activity is flying into
any work trip. It's just like you can't talk to Jan about it because. Like go anywhere and she's like, did you see blah blah blah, or she'll be like, somebody else saw this, and I'm like, yeah, I don't.
I managed in my first trip to New York to do way more tourist stuff than you've done all of your trips combined.
I've seen bars and restaurants and music venues, offices. Anyway, Levain Bakery, a little bit more of a bakery than specifically just cookies, but it was Good Friday. There was a line out the door. Went in there. They were advertising for this lemon cookie that looked amazing for the spring. It was sunny. The previous day, poured rain the entire day.
It looked pretty good.
So I go through the line. I'd already eaten a giant breakfast, and I got these two cookies, which are pretty huge. They're closer to the treat-sized cookies, kind of like fat. I feel like I would compare them more like to, it's almost like half muffin, half cookie, kind of.
I don't know if I would say that.
These particular type of cookies. They're like a bakery item more than they are a cookie, if that makes sense. And so I was just like, I've got this epic trip back. Look, flying east to west. If anybody has ever done it, I think I might be the first. Just an exhausting trip flying east to west. It's like 6.5 hours or something like that. And I was like, this is going to be my meal on the plane is these two cookies. So halfway through, I tear open one, eat through a double chocolate chip cookie. It was very good. I don't think it would be Seattle's best cookie. And that's what I'm judging this by.
Interesting.
I didn't eat it fresh, but, you know, it had traveled for a little while. But I think sometimes people go a little bit too far with the chocolate chips. And I think the thing that I've learned about myself, and literally this cookie search has guided me to this place, because I think before this, I felt like I was a big cookie type of person. And I actually think that I am a flat cookie type of person.
Would you consider Hello Robin's cookies flat?
I would consider Hello Robin's cookies flat.
Because there's not that large a surface area.
What do you mean?
Well, the height, it needs to be determined relative to the width of the cookie. So when I think of like a flat cookie, and I had some of these in Portland, I'll talk about it really quickly in a second, but I made an embarrassing mistake.
Oh no, going to Portland?
It's so confusing. Winterson loves Portland and Winterson hates Portland.
Look, we are at the peak of animosity.
Are we? It's been like 3 months since, 5 months since football season.
No, I don't even really care about them. In the NCAA tournament, people are like, woo, Oregon's gone. And I was like, I was never that concerned.
I don't think this year's team had any real chance. Like, if they won the national championship, that would be concerning. But yeah, I wasn't too worried about
it. If the Mariners won the World Series, that'd be cool.
But yes, I still don't understand why it's an animosity. Is it because you haven't traveled there in a while?
No, it hasn't been that long. December.
Okay. Anyways,
surface area.
They're not Safeway cookies are what I think.
Like really big. You're saying because Hello Robin cookies are small.
So
I'm just saying they're not.
They're
like,
still kind of thick relative to the diameter.
Whereas a really
flat cookie to me, and this actually was an exception. The cookies that I had in Portland, They're almost never moist, those kind of cookies.
Okay.
They're always extremely dry, and I hate dry cookies.
Well, you kind of have to cook them longer if they're really, if they have a big diameter. We're talking about diameters of cookies right now. If they have a big...
Look, this is what we do in these searches.
If they have a big diameter, it's almost...
We have to come up with some sort of an axis, right?
A diameter to width ratio. Because to me, there's a perfect ratio for a cookie, and I don't think it's Levain Bakery, and I don't think it's Treat Cookies. Either. I think those types of cookies that are really, really thick, it's easy to get them to be gooey in the middle, but oftentimes they are just too much. And I do think right now, the more that I've considered it...
I do question, are you not strong enough to handle these cookies in the way that I am?
Absolutely strong enough.
Are you not built for it?
It's a preference issue more than it's a built issue. Because
okay.
I could eat the same amount of Hello Robin cookies or a cookie like that that would equal...
But I'm telling
cookie.
You that Hello Robin is just a smaller version of this, is what I'm telling you. It's not exactly the same because it doesn't
have
the giant center.
Yes, the giant center is the problem.
But it's still dramatically different from these flat-ass cookies.
Okay, I'm not trying to espouse any positive toward the flat-ass cookies we're talking about. But I think there is a certain perfect ratio of a cookie where having the giant middle, the big glob of a middle, and then the thin outsides or whatever, like a little bit crunchy outside, that's not the perfect ratio to me. The perfect ratio is something where the diameter and the width match each other a little bit more closely.
The width and diameter, I think, are probably the same thing. We're talking about the height.
The height.
All right, we'll continue to consider the ratio
but
for
then,
cookies.
Okay, so I open up the bag. I wait for the next day. I open up the bag, excited about
the... So you'd purchase the lemon and
I think
what
it's
was
a
the other one?
Meyer lemon cookie and then double chocolate chip.
Okay.
I open up the... Excited about the Meyer lemon cookie. But kind of. See, that's the thing. When I get a certain perfect ratio cookie, I cannot not eat that cookie. But the thick cookies, I've been able to resist. And... I open it up. I tear open the cookie because I don't even really know what compelled me.
I like big cookies and I cannot lie.
I think it was maybe because I'd seen a chocolate chip and it is a walnut chocolate chip cookie. So really, I had to throw it away.
Threw it away?
I have so many children that are allergic to nuts here too.
I suppose.
Like, literally just like there are cots in the living room.
What?
That's how many of them there are.
It's amazing they're sleeping through this.
Just wait till the Mariner section.
Even the ones upstairs might be able to sleep through that.
But so I was really happy that that wasn't my only sustenance on the plane.
We were able to order food?
No. I had the other cookie.
Oh,
I survived off that and Drive Me Crazy starring Adrian Grenier and Melissa Joan Hart.
Wow, I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Have you ever seen that one? I was thinking that there's
certain
actors that just like, they just are the name of, like he's Vincent Chase. It was Vincent Chase was in a movie with Melissa Joan Hart.
That checks out. I could see that.
I feel like she's Melissa Joan Hart because she did it over two different TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair.
But he's Vincent Chase.
This is the second time this week Sabrina the Teenage Witch has come up in a conversation.
Really?
Yeah. Although Clarissa Explains It All did not come up. A later era of Nickelodeon shows did.
I also watched the documentary about Nickelodeon, which, yikes.
I was in a bar, Shadowland, in West Seattle, eating dinner last week, and was playing on one of the TVs with closed captioning. So I got like some of the context, but not the whole thing. It definitely didn't seem great. Did not seem great.
I don't think you need more of the context.
I mean... I do. I would be interested in watching the entire thing, I suppose. So when I was in Portland, the nearest, like, I was trying to get go to a bakery or something in the morning, and the nearest one to me was Great Harvest.
Okay.
So I went in there and picked up a couple of their cookies, a peanut butter chocolate chip, and... I forget what the other one was, but it also had chocolate chips.
Thickness? Is that what we should call it? Literally, I Googled Levain cookies, and it says, people also ask, what is so special about Levain cookies? Which is always a hilarious question. Levain Bakery is a New York City staple known for its decadent, buttery, super thick cookies.
Yes, thickness is good. Yeah, okay. I think that speaks to it. It's a thick cookie with the two C's. So I thought that Great Harvest was related to the Seattle chain, was the Seattle chain that is GH Pasta and Pizza that I posted on Instagram a few weeks back is in West Seattle, is very solid. Turns out, no, it's a national chain. Completely unbeknownst to me, is General Harvest is the bakery in Seattle that exists and is the chain here.
But there is a Great Harvest. Like, there's one in Bellevue.
There is one in Bellevue, but it's a national chain. It's not eligible for Seattle's Best Cookie.
Would it be Seattle's Best Cookie, even if it were?
It would have been a two-star because... So I was saying that my concern with thin cookies is that they tend to typically be dry. These ones actually were surprisingly not dry in quality in that regard.
Okay.
So I suppose if you do find yourself near a Great Harvest... I've
been to the one in Factoria like 4 or 5 times before.
Okay.
It's been a while, but.
So next week we will have to resume the search for Seattle's Best Cookie.
I'm ready. Tell me where we're going.
Tell me where we go.
I'm ready to be there.
The place that I really want to go this week at some point soon, because I think they're an important place potentially to talk about in this, is Hitchcock Cafe.
Absolutely.
Downtown. Because, well, we'll get into it, but the Hitchcock Deli location that was in Georgetown is no longer open, inspired the first version of the search for Seattle's Best Cookie.
All right.
So, there we go. Do you have any other New York food?
I mean, I had a lot of great food in New York, but it's like a bunch of random restaurants.
All right, Portland food real quick. I wanted to shout out Eam. I had never been to before. It's a Thai barbecue kind of combination. So they have a brisket curry is one of the things I had. I thought that was good. I thought their fried chicken, which was boneless, but not like chicken strippy, was outstanding. I mean,
okay.
It's not quite on the level of
boneless,
screen door.
But not chicken strippy.
It was interesting because it was still shaped as if it had bones. Like when it came, I legit did not know whether it had bones or not.
See, that doesn't sound as good to me. Is it white? It's white meat
yes.
chicken? Usually the more white meat chicken you have, the diameter of white meat chicken is usually worse.
But they were relatively still small pieces.
Okay.
So you were getting a good ratio of fry, breading, to meat. They were quite outstanding. Like, I was full but kept eating the chicken because of the fact that I was enjoying it so much.
All right.
So that was a recommendation
for me. I also felt like there was some contempt for chicken strips in there.
No, I'm not saying there's contempt for chicken strips.
How dare
you? I'm just saying there's a limitation on the quality of a chicken strip. Like, this is speaking from the experience of having learned the value of bone-in chicken during our search for Seattle's Best Fried
okay.
Chicken.
Here to me is the ranking. It's like chicken wings are kind of complicated, but it's chicken thighs
it's
number one.
Search for us at some point.
Chicken thighs number one, undisputed champion, right?
Yes.
They're almost like they're off the board. Chicken leg, I think, is number two. Chicken strip for me is number three. Then there's some sort of combination of wing and breast and stuff like that.
That's probably fair.
Nugget actually is at the bottom.
At the like McDonald's chicken nugget?
Oh, man. Those are pretty good.
Yeah. Chicken's good.
That's the answer. When you fry it, fried's good too.
Chicken's good, fried.
Okay, chicken strip and then chicken nugget.
Anyway.
Then chicken breast. Fried chicken.
I mean, I don't know when you're going to be back in Portland or, you know, your ability to go to this location with 10 to 15 children, but I would recommend you try it. It's quite good. I also went to Porqué No for tacos. I have had that on my list for probably conservatively 10 years and have never made it there before. That was quite solid. Also hit up Nong's, always classic. There is some Hainanese chicken. New Hainanese chicken in Seattle that I'm hoping to check out at some point. We'll maybe discuss on the pod because we've never been able to replicate the Nong's magic in Seattle that I know of. And that would be huge if we could. Also, a quick food note, since we're not going to have a Talkin' Taco time in time to mention this, this is the last week for the taco burger on the menu is an LTO. So if you're craving that taco burger 2.0, be sure to check that out.
Okay. I saw that update and I was so confused about what it meant because I thought you were talking about Lil Woody's. Oh. You said the last week for Taco Burger and I was like, no. I don't remember there being a Lil Woody's Taco Burger.
So I was at Lil Woody's last night. I did not do their Burger of the Week, which is the Georgetown Brewing Burger this week. I love that collaboration. Two of my favorites, Georgetown Brewing and Lil Woody's. But it was a little too much kimchi on that one for me, for my taste.
You're a little too much kimchi.
I don't dispute it. I admit I'm in the wrong here, but the heart wants what it wants. With that, should we do this? Your favorite segment?
This is going to be a wake up the kids with yelling type take. But after 1 week, not even, I truly loathe this baseball team. We used to have this phrase, same old Seahawks. But for some reason, we haven't adopted that one for the Mariners. But it literally feels like last year has repeated itself. We counted on production from 30-year-old Colton Polanco and 33-year-old Mitch LaStella. It was an obviously bad offseason as it was happening. And the quotes from John Stanton just made it worse. We haven't even talked about that. As the final deals of the offseason came in.
I don't know about these quotes.
It was clear. You've got to get back on Twitter ASAP. As the final deals of the offseason came in, it was clear that they're just cheap. Stanton went on TV and cried about dead years in a contract. Are you unaware of this?
No,
he was like, you could have a $300-400 million. It is like, I think he said like hire or buy a 304. It was like, there's language that only owners would use that no normal human being would ever say about a player. And he was crying about there being 2 to 3 seasons of production and then 8 years of basically dead cap money. And it was like, motherfucker, it isn't summer 2022 anymore. Was he scared of the 3 years for Cody Bellinger, Lourdes Gurriel, or Matt Chapman? Or was it the 2 years for Blake Snell that scared him off? And there's this argument that the team is young. It's a young pitching staff, but beyond Julio, they are completely devoid of any legit young offensive talent at all. And having young pitching is a great thing to have so that you could trade it for hitting talent. But relying on health and the growth of pitchers in their early 20s is like counting on Jan to pronounce Chipotle correctly. But let's go through it one by one. Chipotle. From the top of the order, J.P. Crawford had one solid hitting season, and we all just decided to forget that he was replaceable a season ago, a career-long .675 OPS hitter. Julio, the best player on earth who hasn't made a great or clutch play since 2022. Jorge Polanco.
Had a walk-off hit on Saturday.
2022. I kind of forgot about that. Jorge Polanco. Another 1-1-1-run win. Going to be out of the league by the end of the season. He is obviously cooked. Mitch Garver, literally touted as the gem of the offseason until you take one look at the stats and realize he's had one good season in his career 5 years ago, and he's now 33. Cal Raleigh, best GM in the organization. Mitch Haniger, you're cool. Dominic Canzone.
Wait, I thought you talked about negatively about Haniger earlier, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Did I?
You said he was replaceable.
Somehow makes me dislike Italian people, players.
Oh, no.
Maybe Messi is Argentinian after all. What? Ty France. Great average so far, but he's a singles hitting first baseman who can't run or play defense and is surrounded by these hitter. Josh Rojas. Pretty solid setup, man. Has a pretty nasty curve. We can work with it. Meanwhile, Kelenic is hitting .545 for the Braves. Are you aware of this?
I am.
Because of course he is. Gino is hitting .346 for the Diamondbacks, and Teoscar would be leading the Mariners in home runs if he was here. How do you even explain these moves? Jared Kelenic is 24 years old, and they traded him for nothing. He's younger than most of their coveted young pitching staff and was a top 10 prospect. Literally what?
Is this the end of the take? Are you asking the question?
And now I've got to pay for this shit too. This fucking team is costing me $18 a month. I could have gotten a whole dozen Hello Robin cookies for that price. And do you know which one of those things would have been more enjoyable? The worst thing about this, though, is this isn't even a take. They're just bad. Their playoff odds have plummeted. The team who told us through their actions that they only cared about strikeouts forgot to care about players getting on base. They're third worst in the league in on-base percentage. Or that extra base hits matter. Third worst in OPS twos. But not even that. They're also third in the league in strikeouts somehow. Their only wins have come in one-run games. They could easily be 0-7. And their run differential is fourth worst in the league. And there hasn't been anything fun about it.
Well, I agree with that last part, even though they weirdly do have a lot of one-run wins.
What don't you agree with?
That their playoff odds have plummeted. They went from 60% to 50%? That's plummeting?
That was before today.
That's not before today. It's updated through this.
It's updated through the loss today? No way.
I mean, the record says, the 2024 result says 3-4. I mean, you can take it up with Fangraphs if you want.
When
if
I looked earlier, it had
you want to send them an email and ask them which college they went to.
That's a joke just for you and me.
I know, but you laughed at it. It's you know, it's very, it's like writing a headline. I mean, obviously it's...
The Kelenic trade is,
it was hard to, it was challenging to justify in the moment in terms of salary dumping Kelenic. And
there's no there was no salary to dump.
Wasn't Marco Gonzalez in that trade?
They were dumping Kelenic to get off Marco Gonzalez?
I'm pretty sure that was the logic, yeah.
Oh my God.
You were the one that defended this offseason a week ago.
Life comes at you fast.
You didn't utter the phrase, no holes. The strikeouts thing is the most perplexing part of it. Because
it doesn't matter.
It does matter, actually, because if you strike out, fun fact, you never get a hit on a strikeout. You don't get an extra base hit. You don't get a walk. You don't get any of those things on a strikeout. The Mariners entered Wednesday tops in the AL in strikeout rate at 31%, dramatically higher than last season's 26% rate after they prioritized fewer strikeouts, as you said. Every Mariners player with more than 11 plate appearances save Mitch Haniger was striking out more than last season, and every single one of that group is striking out more than their previous career rate.
There's a marine layer that only exists for the Mariners also.
It is perplexing, but when you
look at... The Guardians didn't have a marine layer?
When you look at these players that go to other teams and immediately hit better, I mean, Adrian Beltre. I know how his name is pronounced.
I've mispronounced so many words in that.
I'm just, on a roll here. Adrian Beltre goes to Texas and is immediately a Hall of Famer. Like, are we sure we shouldn't just move the team? I love the stadium.
Seems fair.
The stadium is great, but can we just, lift it up and move it away from
but
the water?
Why doesn't the marine layer exist for the other teams?
I don't know.
Julio hit a ball on, I think that was Tuesday, and I was like, he did it, hit a jack, and then it's just an easy fly out to left field. And I'm like, but then the Guardians are hitting homers easily.
So I think one thing that has improved my view of this season.
What?
Is that I was covering the Portland Regionals. Is did that not you watch any games after Thursday. And the game, one game that I followed, I was following closely, tracking it. I didn't even watch it on my ride home on Saturday. It was Saturday night's game. I see the two runs for the Red Sox in the top of the 10th. I get to my location. I turn off the broadcast, that was an L. Bummer on that one. And then do not check my phone again all night. Get up Sunday morning and see it's an Easter miracle. Julio has walked the game off in the bottom of the 10th. That was my experience of the Mariners, rather than actually having to sit through all these strikeouts.
And not to diminish Julio's work on this important walk-off, but it wasn't, I think there were no outs. All he needed was a sack fly. Getting a hit is great, but putting the ball in play would have gotten the job done.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with this year's Mariners. They don't excel at putting the ball in play. So we'll take it where we can get it. I mean, here's the nature of things.
But the players aren't even with the strikeouts, that's what I'm saying. They're not good at getting hits.
They're not hitting the ball hard
or extra base hits either.
It's not like Mike Ford, where yes, he struck out a lot, but he also hit a lot of fucking home
runs. Or Eugenio Suarez, or Teoscar Hernandez, or Jared Kelenic, the players who they traded.
The players that they acquired should be at least as good at doing those things.
I've really looked into their stats, and they're not.
This season or over the course of their career?
Over the course of their careers. They're counting on players.
I think the one very predictable thing that happened so far is Mitch Garver getting hurt.
Is he hurt already?
He is hurt, yes.
When did he get hurt? Didn't he play today?
Is he back? I don't know. Well, he was hurt. That to me is like, you know, this was a discussion in the Discord, and the listener Sean Kramer mentioned like what happened was very predictable, and I'm like, but our concerns.
No, Garver played today. He was 0-for-4.
Okay, well that's good. Our concerns were injuries, and like what was going to happen to the bullpen because of the fact that it was so injured. The bullpen's been awesome, and they generally haven't been injured.
We haven't even gotten to the fact that Luis Castillo sucks now, with Kirby getting roughed up.
If you're talking to me about, like, this is a conversation, what are the things you're actually the most concerned about that have happened in the first week of the season? Luis Castillo is number one on my list, and I don't even know what number two is.
I actually don't know if I agree with that.
There was a sneaking fear I had coming into the season that they should have traded him now because
what was his value? They should have traded any of these young pitchers. They should have traded Emerson Hancock, Brian Wu, Bryce Miller, and maybe also George Kirby.
I mean, those pitchers have value because other teams also need cost-controlled pitching.
Yeah.
Luis Castillo has value because he is perceived to be an ace, and there is a chance as he gets into this stage of his career that he could fall off.
The most valuable
rapidly.
Player on the team outside of Julio is Kirby.
Unquestionably. I'm not worried about George Kirby after one bad
but
start.
But I also think
where his defenders were literally running into each other.
Oh, God. I didn't even get to that. Oh, my God. They had a position player pitch in the first week.
I mean, that's fine.
That's a pretty solid inning, not going to lie. Anyway, the batting averages, we don't have to emphasize batting average that much, but I do think it matters a little bit, and being at 115, 185, 154, 118, 143, 111, 091.
Of course it matters, but there's no reason to think that all of these guys are going to hit this much worse than their career averages. And so one thing that happens in all of sports...
They're lucky to be 3-4.
They are extremely lucky to be 3-4. I will grant that. Is that you can go through a shitty 7-game stretch in the middle of the season and no one notices. Like, I went through and looked at J.P. Crawford's game log last year. He had a 7-game stretch at the beginning of June where he hit 115 with a 322 OPS. Do you remember that stretch? The answer is no, of course you don't, because it wasn't the first 7 games.
I don't remember that stretch specifically, but that also, this random stretch that you found, his worst of the year, was not as bad as he's doing right now.
He's below 322 OPS? I don't know. I was mostly going off the Baseball Reference stats, and they weren't updated through today's game. So forgive me on that one. I suppose that was in the box score if I looked at that.
Wait, what is his OPS?
Again, the odds that so many Mariners...
Wait, what did you say it was? It's 438 right now. What was it then?
It was 322.
322 OPS?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, he does have a single homer this year.
So you just, like, you have a 7-game stretch like that, and just no one notices it. So that's the important thing.
But all of them are having a 7-game stretch like that. It's not just J.P. Crawford. It's basically everybody on the team.
So do you think that everyone on the team, like,
I think
lost
they might
their ability
just be
at the
bad.
Same time?
Yes. It's not that they lost their ability at the same time. It's that
do you
the,
think that, like,
the,
do you, the did the Monstars take it?
Counting on likely unrepeatable things. They were counting on a couple of free agents who had had good seasons multiple years ago and had fine seasons last year.
Yeah, but they're
but
not having fine
old.
Seasons. If your argument was...
But there's a moment in baseball, Colton Wong is cooked. Colton Wong is not like, he's never going to bounce back. Colton Wong is done.
I just and don't they think have you can been, tell that.
About Colton Wong or Jorge Polanco?
About anyone before it happens. Because
I think when you're counting on players
what's the
who are well into their 30s.
What's the difference between that and Gino Suarez having a down year offensively and then he goes to any other stadium and is immediately awesome? Like, what's the difference between that and Adrian Beltre's 3 years in Seattle? Because at the end of Beltre's time in Seattle, 4 years or 5 years or whatever it was, at the end of Beltre's time in Seattle, you would have said his only good offensive year in his entire career was his last year in the Dodgers, his walk year. He was just trying hard that year in free agency. Obviously, this guy sucks. Why did the Rangers sign him? And then he's a Hall of Famer. Like, these things are not as predictable as they seem, and they're particularly not predictable over small sample sizes.
They're predictably bad when it happens here, though.
I mean, that's why I think they have to move the stadium. This is the only realistic solution.
It must be too close to water.
Build the dome. I love the T-Mobile experience as a fan, but if the Mariners are ever going to win anything, they got to build the dome.
I'm so fine without having T-Mobile. I was so happy in that dome. I'm the only one.
Yeah, I know. That's why I knew you. I didn't even. I think I may have referenced this.
The ball.
I was like,
there was no Adrian Beltre back then.
Tristan is going to enjoy this Pro Kingdom take.
But the other thing is they had the gall after this offseason, when you're like, where's the honeymoon period? They raised ticket prices after that season that they had last year. I have all sorts of other things that could have been in the takes.
This is fair because I think one of the things you could say for a long period of time is like...
I hope John Stanton enjoys all of those empty seats. There's going to be plenty of room to stretch out and watch this team.
Sure, the Mariners baseball people are bad.
Uh-huh.
And ownership. But they do a great job at all the other stuff.
What? What other stuff?
Like the ball, you know, the food at T-Mobile is terrific. That is still true. Yeah, you know, the center field bleachers and things of that, the King's Court, things of that nature. This year they did bring back the commercials, which was good, but they have even failed that with the ticket price increases this year.
It literally doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it makes sense because they are trying to make more money, but you end up in these situations where you're like, well, we can't spend on the team, and so we need to make more money elsewhere. We'll charge more for ticket prices, but the team won't be good, and you're just like, just move the fucking team to Vegas then, dude. Like, this, it's not gonna work.
Do not move the team to Vegas. Under any circumstances.
But you get the point that I'm making. When you find yourself in that situation where you're like, we need to come up with money somewhere, it can't be by having a better team. Where do you end up at?
I agree with that assessment.
Maybe find some other way to sell your fucking network.
Well, then.
We'll see. There is a line. You talk about the Mendoza line. There's a me paying for the extra sports package line for this season.
I think that it is reasonably possible from conversations that I've had that Root Sports does not exist beyond this Mariners season.
Great. But we're in this Mariners season.
But that's not going to be better for the Mariners financially than it is now. Like, there's no good outcome of cable breaking down for the Mariners. They've
anticipated everything wrong. Was John Stanton the owner of the team in 2013?
He was part of the ownership group. He had not yet assumed majority ownership, I believe.
That is what they do repeatedly, is they anticipate things badly before something is about to happen. And the best thing you can do as an organization is anticipate what's about to happen well.
This is the same guy who a few years ago was talking about how smart the Mariners were because they had Kraken TV rights.
I mean, I thought that the Kraken TV rights would be solid, but now it's just like...
The worst thing you can have now is TV rights. they're underwater on TV.
There are certain TV rights that are good, but
no, there aren't. Not to local TV at this point.
Yeah, local TV rights, maybe not.
So,
but they are signing.
If they can get the NCAA women's basketball tournament from ESPN, yeah, they're in good shape.
They're signing players right before their careers are about to end. Literally, Colton Wong is not on a team. And we went into last year being like, well, in the pretty much the same place that we went into the season with Jorge Polanco, you have to anticipate what's about to happen. And maybe your 24-year-old top 10 prospect is a good bet to make. Not a player that you should be attaching because you made a shitty... They signed Marco Gonzalez. The Mariners did this. Nobody else did this. They signed Marco Gonzalez to a shitty deal that they wanted to get off of. You don't attach... possible star young hitting to get off $10 million.
You know, if I had more time, I would edit in you defending the Jared Kelly.
I'm just literally, I was so sick this entire offseason of everybody complaining because it's boring to be like the Mariners are bad over and over and over again. I hate ownership.
But look at the statistical projections for the Mariners.
Fuck your statistical projections.
Like, what else are you supposed to do but do the thing that has the best chance? Like, if you do the thing that is going to work out after the fact, yeah, if you have a crystal ball, like, every decision is going to be good. But just, like, draft the Hall of Famer in the third round isn't a sustainable business model.
But trading away your top 10 prospect who's 24 years old is not a good business model.
But if Jared Kelnick was hitting 100 right now, you'd be like, phew, thank God we
got him. No, I wouldn't. I'd be like, that's fine. There's not relief if Jared Kelenic hits badly. Does that make sense? Dominic Canzone's hitting like 118.
Bring back Haggerty.
I mean, is he healthy?
I don't know what's going on there.
Just need somebody like Hegarty right now because there's no oomph to the team at all. They have no personality. All of it is weird, held over stuff from years before. Scott Servais does nothing out there. I think this might be the season. We'll see. It's been 1 week. This is what Mariners hot takes are all about, though. This might be the season.
The question is though,
the entire bottom falls out. This might be like the entire bottom falls out. Scott Servais is fired. That they're going to clear house of a bunch of these players. That it's going to be like what we thought was the Mariners' core might not be the Mariners' core.
There's only so many players they can get rid of. So I don't agree with that.
I think it is George Kirby and it is Julio, and that's it. That's all they've got in the organization.
You're just throwing away Logan Gilbert that quickly?
All right, Logan Gilbert is... I will accept Logan Gilbert. But
I think...
The idea that we're like, just like, check mission accomplished with Emerson Hancock, Brian Wu, and Bryce Miller, just because you promoted them to the majors doesn't mean that they're necessarily that good.
But they are cheap.
Okay. Thanks, John Stanton. You're like, they're not good, but hear me out. They're cheap. You need to have people who are good at playing baseball on the roster. You can't just say, just because they promoted them, they made starts. Like, I think Bryce Miller was fine.
The Mariners were number fucking one in starter war last season. I just don't know what you're looking for.
That also was because of Castillo is dominating Kirby and Logan Gilbert.
No, he wasn't. Castillo was like solid.
He's an all-star pitcher. What else could you want from him? Emerson Hancock had made, I think, what,
I mean, I
two
don't think
starts?
They, yeah, I don't think they were number five because Emerson Hancock's your swing starter. He's the Marco Gonzalez role. Like, he's
Bryce
not
Miller had a
4.32
ERA last year. It's good for a 24-year-old, but you don't just look at that and say, like, they should have traded one of these players. They approached the offseason totally wrong.
I mean... If you had couldn't add payroll, then they didn't approach the offseason wrong.
But you don't necessarily need to add payroll. I think they could have traded.
If you could trade an equivalent starting pitcher for an equivalent prospect who's a hitter, you would have done that. But you can't do that because other teams recognize that pitching is variable too.
But there's
the thing is that people do it. They're like,
well,
we know this thing, but no one else in the world knows this thing. And that is true in some cases, like trading down in the NFL draft. No one else in the world gets that. But
who gets it though? The Seahawks?
Actually, strangely, yes.
Sometimes.
The odds of the Seahawks trading down at this point are so high.
Oh, I think... Didn't I call that like a week ago?
I believe you did. I mean, Bryce Miller had 1.2 WAR last year in 131 innings. Like,
I like Bryce Miller. Good. But just going into the season being like the pitching staff is going to be exactly the same as it was the previous... That's what they needed to have those projections. The projections are based off the pitching staff. And if the pitching, if the hitting is as bad as it seems like it's going to be, the pitching staff needs to
again,
be the
hitting
best.
Is not going to be as bad as it
they
seems
need
like it's
to be,
be
the best in baseball for to reach those projections.
Luis Castillo is the issue there, not Bryce Miller.
Castillo is going to be
fine.
Did
Bryce Miller win his start?
He did. Just because you win your start doesn't mean you did anything right.
Yeah,
that's
he did
about
7.2 ERA. Yeah. Okay.
Wins and losses guy over here.
I mean, it's one start again.
Tebow was good.
Again, I haven't watched any of these since opening day. I watched like off and on today after they were already down 3-0.
Way too much baseball.
Yeah, maybe.
And you know what I'll keep doing?
Maybe you should.
I paid $18 for that shit. I'm getting my money worth.
Just follow it through the stats. It's a much healthier way to live. The Mariners signed Dallas Keuchel to a minor league contract. The 2015 Cy Young winner has bounced around the last two seasons, starting six games for the Twins after similarly signing a minor league contract. He had a 9.2 ERA in 2022 because that is a real number, and a 5.97 ERA last season. He was last under a 5 ERA in 2020, the first year of his three-year contract with the White Sox.
Cool.
Roundup time. Seattle Kraken, no fooling. Shane Wright scored his second career goal on Monday after being recalled for just his fourth game.
Is this a joke that I'm supposed to get?
No, the point was that he did it on April Fool's Day.
Oh, fair enough.
And if you were a brand, it would have been an April Fool's joke. But alas, he is not. Kraken did lose 5.
but alas, he is not.
Well, we are all brands, I suppose, in our way. Kraken lost 5-2 to the LA Kings on Tuesday night. Currently still sitting...
Still playing hockey games.
They are still playing hockey games. Sitting ninth.
I actually, for some reason, turned that... I think it was because I had Root Sports on after the Mariners game and that came on. And I was like, wow, people are definitely still going to these.
Still sitting ninth in the lottery standings. 7 games to go for the Kraken.
The Kraken have really managed to not be good. They're slightly young. They have some...
They're pretty much average.
I mean, Matty Beniers is hypothetically in.
Matty Beniers might be the...
Julio. and also not have that good of a draft pick, so...
Well, you know who's not... Who's good on pace for a good
but
draft
the Mariners,
pick?
But the Mariners have those sweet TV rights.
You know who's on pace for a good draft pick right now?
Who's that?
Seattle Sounders!
Hello.
Who still have not won a game this season after losing 1-0 Saturday at the LA Galaxy as they gave up the lone goal in the 4th minute.
Honestly, there's something about when the Mariners are this bad and I'm upset about it that just like tear it down. Just let everybody be bad.
Well, it's weird though because historically, the Mariners and Sounders are never bad at the same time. You'll recall that they have never both made the playoffs in the entire this time the Sounders have been in Seattle. But one of them has made the playoffs every year that they have been in Seattle. So that if you want the best news about the Mariners season, it's how bad the Sounders are right now. The Sounders took 17 shots on Saturday, but just threw on goal. Still did have 1.9 expected goals. Harrison Crow of American Soccer Analysis noted the Sounders have been one of the unluckiest team in the history of their database in terms of expected goals. Their expected goal differential so far, plus 0.8 by their metrics. They are actually minus 3, Yikes. A difference that is entirely in terms of scoring goals. Based on that, they'd be expected to have 8 points instead of their actual 2.
Is this the darkest time? We did go to the national championship in college football. It feels like it was so long ago. I was going to say, is this the darkest time in Seattle sports history?
That week.
I know, yeah. Maybe
it's not the darkest time because, again, 2008 happened.
In the Pelton Cast era.
It is strange how bad things have gone for a solid couple of months here.
We were riding so high Seattle sports-wise for basically the entirety of the Pelton Cast era.
I don't know if I'd go that far. The Kraken curse?
Even then, it was kind of fun. And there was only a curse because the teams had expectations.
I suppose so.
All right, fair enough. Maybe I'm wrong.
The Seahawks, UW football lost its coach. UW men's basketball fired their coaches.
That's what I'm saying. Or then or right now?
This time.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, a lot of bad things are happening.
Do you think Schmetz is... There's a level of bad that Schmetz is gone, right? This could be a transitional year for a lot of legendary coaches.
You know my belief that Brian Schmetzer should be the manager for life until he doesn't want to coach anymore. I mean, maybe not for life. I don't want to name your college football team situation, but, you know, as long as he can reasonably coach.
I don't agree with that take. I don't think anybody
I also don't
should
think
be...
you should almost ever change coaches, actually. Is the king of unpopular takes. Unpopular but statistically sound takes.
It's statistically sound to say that you should, but if you find a very good coach, I think, in fact, you're wrong about this. You should probably be changing coaches way more often.
Absolutely not, because it constantly forces you, like, you see this in English soccer.
I know, you hate this, that people are looking to achieve short-term goals, but finding somebody
short-term
like...
Short-term goals are automatically opposed to long-term goals. By definition, they are. You can't have both the short-term and the long-term be the goal, because if they're both the goal, neither of them is the goal.
I don't think that's true.
Of course it's true. There's a trade-off, natural trade-off between short-term and long-term. So if you're prioritizing short-term, you can't be prioritizing long-term definitionally.
But there's a program building when it comes to certain things.
I mean, there's a certain case where, and look, you know my position on Jim
Elmora. Short-term goals help you achieve long... Oh, Gonzaga had short-term goals that helped them achieve long-term goals.
I mean, I suppose so from like an actual coaching standpoint of like, we have goals in this game and, you know, those are...
No, if you have... The thing...
process is what it does it, not goals.
Winning usually begets winning.
I mean, depends on the sport.
In some sports, winning begets winning. So winning short-term helps you, puts you in a better position to win long-term. If you're an NFL franchise and you win short-term, free agents are more likely to want to sign there. You're able to attract better coaching.
But that's not how winning short-term actually works. How winning short-term actually works is you trade a second-round pick for fucking Leonard Williams. and then you don't have the second round pick.
Both of these things can be achieved. The 49ers are good at winning short term and long term. Are they not?
They have a specific philosophy that has worked out for them by nature of the compensatory pick system. The 49ers,
but also even how the rosters...
So I think the 49ers actually are an interesting example here because they did have a lot of turnover for a period of time in their coaching staff. And then they found the right coach in Kyle Shanahan and they stuck with him even when things didn't go well.
Kyle Shanahan was never the problem. There was never even really a concern.
I agree that Kyle Shanahan was never the problem, but if you're... Brian Schmetzer isn't the fucking problem with the Sounders.
Why should they have stuck with Chip Kelly for that long? Should Chip Kelly have been the coach for life?
I didn't say that.
Who was the guy who they hired after? After Jim Harbaugh?
Defensive line coach. He's Italian.
The guy who's so obviously... They hired him, we're just like, yes. Good hire. I want to call it Mike Tomsula. Was that it?
Jim Tomsula. I believe he's coaching in Europe at this point. I want to say he's coaching the Rhine Fire, and then I've looked this
coaching
up.
Colton Wong somehow.
So you know my Jim Elmora theory.
Yeah,
like, if you know the guy is wrong, then you have to move on. But Brian Schmetzer is not Jim Elmora. Scott Servais is
what
not
is
even
the
Jim
phrase,
Elmora.
Fire fast and hire slow. In fact, you're entirely wrong about this. Your whole perspective is wrong. I'm sorry.
You're wrong
if
about
you
this.
Don't have the right person, you know you don't have the right person. You should move on immediately.
Jim Tomsula. Yeah, but again, Brian Schmetzer and Scott Servais are not, you know you have the wrong person.
Literally baseball managers. What do they even do?
I agree with this assessment, which is all the less reason to fire them.
I mean, I'm not saying that they should fire Scott Servais. I'm saying that I think this could be the season that it happens.
I agree that it could be the season that it happens.
But any season could be the season.
Well, no, I don't think 2022 or 2021, at least, like plausibly could have been the season where it happened because expectations were so low. There was no way they were going to.
The other annoying thing is the ticket prices are never going back down. Once they get to a certain threshold, it's not like they're
if the seats are empty enough, I think they could go back.
Well, I've got some news for you.
I don't think they're that empty relative to most Aprils yet. I'm talking about like
but
if it's
that's the thing.
If it's July and they're still not like telling tickets.
They're not necessarily empty relative to most Aprils, but they're also not in a good place either. And the team being bad is your short-term goals help out your long-term goals. Their short-term goals are selling tickets right now. The long-term goals are selling tickets through the entire year. Winning right now is what helps out that long-term goal, but they're not doing it. When I think about going to a Mariners game.
Selling tickets in the short term would be like, hey, let's sign Ken Griffey Jr.
Or, I mean, they should be selling tickets for as cheap as possible, getting people excited about the fan experience, then raising the ticket prices.
It's a little different than what I'm talking about.
They should sign Ken Griffey Jr.
Or they should sign Ichiro.
You're saying that to me?
Ichiro is ready.
If they were like Randy Johnson starting tomorrow, I'd be like, let's fucking go. Wouldn't you?
I mean,
you'd tune in, wouldn't you?
I agree. I would tune in.
All of a sudden, you'd watch one more Mariners game.
I don't know that's really accomplishing anything. I don't know how we got here.
There are things that need to be fixed about the world. There's a thing about Banana Ball, Savannah Bananas, where the dude was just like, I looked at all the problems that were happening with what we were doing, and I just basically went through and tried to fix them all. And I'm like, I'm right here. I fixed soccer for people. There was literally a comment on there in the comments to that post about, and they were because they were talking about making baseball much shorter, and a person was like, "That's why I like soccer. It's just like a quick 90 minutes." And I'm like, "Literally half of soccer is time wasting. Soccer is
it's half of soccer.
It's a tight 90 minutes with stoppage time. 45 of those minutes is basically the goalie holding the ball.
You know how long the games are going to last. It's a very nice thing.
I agree. Baseball, honestly, sometimes is too short for me now.
But it's more predictable.
You know about how long baseball is going to last now, and it's pretty fast. They fixed it. There are problems that exist, and they fixed them. And the problem that is existing right now is ticket prices are too damn high.
Run for mayor. Obed Vargas has cleared concussion protocol for the Sounders after missing Saturday's match. Joel Palo also returned to training on Tuesday, could see action on Saturday, presumably off the bench. The Sounders will host the Montreal Impact, who have 7 points from 5 matches, sitting 10th in the East. also part of this Seattle. I don't know what we're going to call this stretch.
We have to give it a second before it can be named. Oh, if we okay. name if we name it too early, like Mariners might have one good week, and then all of a sudden,
I want the Mariners to have a good week. So let's.
That's
name
what I'm saying.
It
we don't want to name it.
Seattle Swoon, Seattle Reign FC, who suffered their first loss ever.
Wow.
To the hated rival San Diego Wave. In
at least the Seahawks don't the Eagles.
In heartbreaking fashion, with sub Emily Van Egmond scoring in the 8th minute of stoppage time on Friday night.
Snappy game.
We probably did deserve it with 16 shots, 5 on goal.
Because the thing about
shots.
That stoppage time is that's 8 minutes of time that was wasted before then.
Well, sometimes they're due to legitimate injuries. Like, it's not all stoppage time is like, you know, the goalkeeper.
The other piece of it, too. Like, the ratio of time stopped versus, quote-unquote, like an injury where somebody misses any time has to be so minuscule.
I mean, just because you don't miss any time doesn't mean you don't need to admit it. How about, they don't have timeouts, right?
That's what makes it snappy.
The Wave probably did deserve the 3 points with 16 shots, 5 on goal, and 9 shots and 2 on goal for the Reign.
We're at the point of the podcast that we're praising the 49ers and saying the Wave deserve the points.
Yes, we are. Look, it's the Seattle Swoon. Just Fishlake missed the game on bereavement leave for the Reign while Quinn was in concussion protocol. Well, you know,
this is what we've got.
One Seattle
there
team.
There we go.
As UW softball, who swept Oregon State with a pair of one-run wins, the fun differential was going there. On Thursday, Kinsey Fiedler had a walk-off double in the bottom of the 7th after neither team had scored since the 3rd inning. On Saturday, the Huskies and Beavers went 8 innings scoreless before Riley Holtorf walked it off with a solo home run.
That's how you walk off a game, Julia.
Sorry, your walk-off wasn't good enough because it could have just been a sack fly. Ruby Malin pitched 8 2/3 scoreless innings and struck out 10, but did not get the win, with Sidney Peters, freshman of the week, getting it for recording the final out of the top half of the inning with the go-ahead run on second. It was actually her second win in relief of the weekend because she also got one on Thursday. In between, UW slugged out a 7-1 run Friday behind 3 home runs as Lindsay Lopez went the distance in that one. Huskies still dropped a spot to number 9 in the rankings as Oklahoma State jumped them after taking 2 of 3 at number 2 Texas. This weekend, the Huskies head to your least favorite state, except when it's your favorite state.
It's never once been my favorite state. How dare you?
Head to Eugene to face number 22, Oregon. The Ducks come
God,
in.
Even the freaking Ducks are ranked.
I mean, many Pac-12 softball teams are. Many future Big Ten softball teams are. The Ducks come in 7-4 in conference play, good for 4th. They dropped their first 2 games at UCLA last weekend before Saturday's game was canceled due to I can't find the reason. Neither team's website said it.
That's actually incredible.
They didn't have a news story.
Dude, I'm sure it's rain, right?
Presumably.
I doubt it was locusts. If there was any other reason, you probably would have heard about it.
That's a fair point. I was told it never rains in Southern California.
It rained a ton, I think.
It pours. It pours.
Okay.
UW men's basketball news. Besides Will Conroy. So the first member of the coaching staff we know is Andy Hill, who will be following Sprinkle from Utah State as an assistant coach after being passed over as his replacement when Utah State instead hired Youngstown State coach Jared Calhoun as their new basketball coach. Hill may be familiar looking after 10 seasons as an assistant at Utah.
You'd be surprised.
He was to me. He's an Eastern Washington grad with extensive Pacific Northwest experience.
There we go.
Linked up with Sprinkle at Montana State's last season there before now following him to 2 new schools. Percy Allen reported that Sprinkle is expected to retain Jerry Hobby in some role as part of the coaching staff, while the other assistant coach candidates include friend of the pod, Diedrich Taylor.
Hello.
And former USC associate head coach, Tony Bland. Bland was given a 3-year show cause notice by the NCAA in April 2021 after pleading guilty to a felony count of conspiracy to commit bribery as part of the fallout from the FBI's investigation into corruption in college basketball.
It is funny that now, like, Chuck Klosterman has talked about this, where it's like he was literally just trying to support the players at the time. That's just like how we view this overall, which I'm not even saying he was wrong. That the entire view of, like, quote-unquote bribery or whatever in college sports, post-NIL, our whole perception has changed.
I do think it's a more complex conversation than the kind of conventional wisdom, the, you know, kind of the progressive conventional wisdom has, but we can have that conversation if and when they hire Bland. He was sentenced to 2 years in probation, 100 hours of community service, and has spent the past 3 years coaching at the high school level in the LA area. So that show cause ends. It was listed as beginning on April, announced as beginning on April 15th. So presumably they could not hire him until then, but that's also 12 days from now, 11 days as you listen to this. Percy Allen also reported that former Eastern star Elvin Snow Jr., who played at Franklin and has coached in the crossover very successfully, was a candidate. But Snow was the source refuting this on X Wednesday, as he said he will not be joining the coaching staff. UW men's basketball transact time. We start with Corin Johnson. We start with Corin Johnson, who told On3.com his options include returning to the Huskies or transferring to Florida, Indiana, Oregon, or UCLA.
Fair enough. I mean, I actually think this is maybe a tier lower than what I thought it would be. But
who did you think it was going to be, like Kentucky?
I thought he would be, have options at the biggest programs. And it is kind of hilarious that literally these are probably two of the most famed programs in NCAA basketball history.
UCLA, yes. They're noted for their college basketball success historically.
Outside of Oregon, Florida had a long run. Indiana and UCLA are two of the five most famed college basketball programs of all time.
I mean, Oregon did win a game in this year's NCAA tournament.
So, but it's not not at the level of UCLA, Indiana, or even Florida, the championships they won.
No,
so,
I would agree with that.
But I thought he would be at the top tier. He's at tier two.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
No, I actually think there is. If this was UNC, Kentucky, programs like that, it'd be all right, we'll see you later, Corin Johnson. When I look at this, I think that Danny Sprinkle could recruit. He's from Seattle, right?
Yes.
I think that Danny Sprinkle could recruit against these teams.
Re-recruit.
I mean, three of the four are going to the same conference that the Huskies are going to. Florida's a radically different one, but the history is much better at Indiana, UCLA, and Florida. They're not necessarily teams. Did Florida make the NCAA tournament?
They did, yes.
They did. Okay, so but
under our old friend Todd Golden.
Did Indiana?
Indiana had a dreadful season. So they made the tournament.
Half of these teams didn't make the NCAA tournament, and the other half were just they competed, but they weren't really finalists.
Not championship contenders, no.
So you couldn't even necessarily look at the roster. The history, yes. You couldn't necessarily look at the roster and be like, oh, of course.
Right.
Obviously, the fear is that he ends up at Oregon. It's not the same as Jabbar Muhammad or something like that. The rivalry just isn't there between these two schools. I would be annoyed about it, but it wouldn't be the same level.
It wouldn't ruin your day?
I mean, I don't think any college sports transact could ruin my day. But I do think there's a chance that Corin Johnson comes back.
Nate Kelmese also submitted his notification of transfer, possibly related to that. UW got their first 2024-25 transfer commitment from 6'5" Rice guard Makai Mason on social media. Now, this is not to be confused with his namesake, who is spelled differently, who helped Yale win at UW. I believe that was Lorenzo Romar's last season.
Oh, I thought it was that
at
guy.
UW and finished his career at Baylor.
You're really getting deep with the...
There's someone else out there besides me who remembers the Yale Makai Mason.
Oh, I remember losing to Yale.
The Huskies had 14...
Was he the guy who went off?
I'm pretty sure he was. I didn't double check
that
his
stats.
That
was the era where Romar would play all these teams and then one random player would go off against them.
Oh, 100%. Did Nate Walters have a huge game against the Huskies that convinced me that he was going to be an amazing player? Still waiting for Nate Walters.
It dates all the way back to Wally Szczerbiak.
That wasn't Lorenzo Romar.
I know. Just saying.
Also very much not a random player. He was on the fucking cover of Sports Illustrated that year. Yeah, Yale was the season opener in 2016-17. Huskies lost 98-90 in that one.
I think I listened to it on the radio.
Oh, wow. Makai Mason, after all that, he was injured that year.
didn't even play.
Mie Oni, who was later a second-round pick by the Utah Jazz, had 24 points to lead Yale. Trey Phils, the son of Bobby Phils, also saw action in that one, but had just 4 points.
Okay. All right, we've talked enough about Mekhi Mason, about the former
Mekhi Mason.
About the other
This Mekhi Mason has 2 years of eligibility remaining. He started all 67 games. He played for the Owls, averaging 14 points per game last season. The efficiency, pretty questionable. He shot 42% on twos, 34% on threes, 68% on free throws. Did shoot 37.5% on threes as a freshman, so that's encouraging, although the free throw percentage, not real great. His minus 0.2 offensive BPM per sportsreference.com, a little better than Nate Kelmy's, even with Paul Mulcahy behind all the other UW rotation players. So I think ideally you're hoping he can be your third or maybe even fourth guard.
I always liked Paul Mulcahy. I didn't realize his season was that bad. He kind of just faded away.
I mean, it was good defensively, but offensively was not contributing a lot in the box score, certainly. Notably, Utah State starters Great Osabor, I should say, the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year, as we talked about, and Ian Martinez both submitted notifications of transfer on Wednesday. Martinez was the second leading scorer for the Aggies after Osabor.
Where do you think they're going to go?
I don't think it's 100%. I don't know if they have... I did not see that they have do not contacts, which is basically means like I have my mind up and I know where I'm going. But... It certainly seems like a reasonable possibility. Osabor is also going to test the NBA draft waters.
Did Ian Martinez, Great Osabor followed?
No, Martinez came from...
Just to Utah State. Yeah. But still, I mean, Great Osabor has been with Danny Sprinkle for years and years and years.
His entire college career has been played with Danny Sprinkle, so... I would not be terribly surprised if that
continued. I don't know what the legality is of this conversation happening. I don't think Danny Sprinkle forgot to mention Great Osabor before he took this job.
It seems unlikely. I think it's legal to tell him you're leaving the team. You can't recruit him while you're doing that, but it is legal to tell him you're going. He has 1 year of eligibility remaining. So does Martinez, I believe. He's a grad transfer. He started his career at Utah. It was actually like... Martinez was the number 60 overall recruit, then played 2 years at Maryland before landing at Utah State.
Really? So you went to Utah, to Maryland, to Utah State, to somewhere else?
Yeah.
That's a lot of transact.
There's so many players out there now, especially...
That have just been at a million colleges.
They can't restrict transfers anymore now with the court ruling against them.
In any way?
No.
The ruling was... Before you could have one free one. Wasn't it if your coach left it, that also opened it up?
Like basically they had to offer immediate eligibility on a case by case basis for your second transfer.
But so the court ruled that you can go anywhere.
The Raekwon Battle ruling.
There we go.
And then the NCAA was like, yeah, we're not going to bother fighting this. I mean, a free for all now.
Why should they bother fighting it? It's one of those things. I was literally watching The Fugitive, and I was. Tommy Lee Jones is pursuing Harrison Ford, right?
I know Bill Simmons is co-hosting this podcast.
They're looking for the one-armed man. And at some point, I was just like, why does Tommy Lee Jones care that much? You know what I mean? He cares so much.
I get it if you're like in it. But I started this. I've come this far.
It's more about the obsession to do it. There's certain things, certain characters who come.
I mean, look, we'll get into the FBI investigation if they hire Tony Bland. I think this realistic thing is about like, we did it just because... We could,
and also it is your job, and you got to do something to prove that you should have a job.
And in that case, it was because the FBI agents wanted to spend a lot of money in Las Vegas.
I mean, you know. But so there's sometimes things, there's people who come one time per year or whatever, and I'll go to, like, such great lengths to hide these things from children, and I'm like, why do I care this much? I'm like, literally, what is this for? Nobody else cares. And I'm like going to these extravagant lengths for something. And it's kind of like the NCAA. It's just like, why do you care that much? You're so obsessed with the idea of restricting where college students can go to college that you're like, well, we probably should have a lawsuit about this. Right? It's literally just, it is a control issue.
We should
spend
a lot of money on lawyers to battle this.
Right? That's basically it, where they're like, well, we need to control the players, because if we don't control the players, all of a sudden people might be like, why do we need an NCAA?
Well, that's true. I mean, I do think it is a bummer a little to a degree, players transferring so many times, but they should have every right to do so.
The end of this is going to be contracts. We know where this is going.
We do.
I've heard... There was some coach that I saw where he was like, I was upset that we spent all of this percentage of our NIL money... This is a football thing. They were like, we spent a good chunk of our NIL money for this player, and then they transfer it, and it's like, contracts are going to start happening pretty soon here. Because that's when people start thinking of it that way. They're like, I'm not going to spend this money if somebody's going to transfer. The way that you stop that from happening has already been invented by every professional sports league.
Shouts to collective bargaining, as always. 2024 Husky recruit Zoom Diallo said nothing about the Huskies when asked about his commitment at Tuesday's McDonald's All-American game, saying his focus was there on the game. The Tacoma native committed to the Huskies on December 23rd, citing Will Conroy, Quincy Pondexter, and Mike Hopkins specifically.
Mike Hopkins, Kalen DeBoer, Troy Danik. it's like Jed Cohen too, you know? Oh, Lord.
Pete Carroll's nearby. Yeah,
Pete Carroll. Scott Service, current manager of the Seattle Mariners.
UW's other 2024
He's
signing.
Like, you know the one guy I really don't want to be in the same city as? Dallas Keuchel.
Well, good news. He's in Tacoma.
Okay.
Which is where he's from. UW's other 2024 signee, Kazmir Chavis, was released from his letter of intent and decommitted.
So Zoom Diallo hasn't done anything.
He has chosen not to.
I mean, Zoom Diallo is going to probably reopen his recruitment.
There's no good reason for him not to reopen it.
That's the other thing that I think about with this. The most fun part of being a college athlete is not playing the games. It's being pursued.
Sure.
So if you can do that every single year, if you can have a bunch of people telling you how much they want you to be on their team, taking you out and stuff, of course you're going to do that as much as possible. And when you have to go play the games, that's hard. That's a hard piece.
That's why you love the Transact.
And that's why everybody loves the Transact. Right?
Well, unfortunately, it's not games yet, but UW football is no longer well, they are still transacting, but they are now practicing, having spring practice started on Wednesday.
Oh, that was a Friday night. When is that? That's like...
May 3rd, I believe, is the...
I just feel like May 3rd is going to be a really busy day, but I'm going to go to that.
What else is going on?
Except all sorts
of
music being released May 3rd. Okay. I feel like we keep targeting that.
I'll have to see what's going on in the NBA playoffs at that point. I'm the one person who is not excited about a Friday night game. Running back Will Nixon submitted a notification of transfer ahead of spring practice. Nixon had 33 carries for 201 yards last season and got 2 carries in the national championship game. But the depth chart at running back now more crowded with the addition of Jonah Coleman via transfer and the return of Cameron Davis.
Was it Will Nixon who dropped a pass out of the backfield?
In the championship game?
I think it was Will Nixon.
It seems plausible.
Anyway, the whole roster is running back, so.
It was not surprising that one of them was going to transfer, yes. And Tybo Rogers being younger makes more sense that he'd stick around and, I think, try to compete with Jonah Coleman.
I mean, there also are multiple freshmen running back coming in as well.
Yeah. Nixon, I think, has up to 2 years of eligibility remaining because he had the COVID year and then redshirted when he was redshirting, hypothetically, and then also got to redshirt the next year when he played just 3 games at Nebraska before playing 2 years at UW. Seahawks signed wide receiver Laviska Shenault Jr., who could also factor into the team's plans, is a kick returner.
There we go.
We did not talk, I don't think, about on the pod about the NFL passing a modified kickoff rule that is going to make kickoff returns a thing once again. Dynamite drop in.
Cool. I don't know.
Shenault.
I've always liked Laviska Shenault.
Not as much as like some people were so hyped on Shenault coming out of Colorado when he was a second round pick in 2020. He was a part-time starter his first 2 seasons in Jacksonville, totaling 121 catches for 1,219 yards, 5 touchdowns. Then got traded to Carolina before his 3rd season, had just 37 catches the last 2 seasons, including 10 for 60 yards in 8 games last year. He did return occasional kickoffs for the Panthers, averaging 27.7 yards per return, and is presumably competing for a roster spot as both a receiver and a kick returner with Dee Eskridge, who's averaged 25.2 yards per return. DJ Dallas, the Seahawks' primary kick returner last year, now in Arizona.
I mean, we'll see between the two of them, but again, I've always
or
liked...
Or who else could be in the mix?
Laviska Shenault. It was one of those moves where you're like, oh, okay, I like that guy.
That checks out.
Yeah. Went to Colorado.
Guard Greg Van Roten is scheduled to visit the Seahawks. I believe Aaron Wilson was the first to report that. He started all 17 games for the Raiders at right guard last season on a 1-year deal, playing 98% of snaps After playing primarily as a reserve in Buffalo in 2022, Van Roten turned 34 in February. He was previously in training camp with the Seahawks in 2014, but was waived and their roster cut down and didn't stick in the NFL until 2017, becoming a starter for the first time the following year. PFF rated him significantly better last season than departed starter Damian Lewis.
Yeah, but this seems kind, I guess the money is the factor here, but it seems kind of like a no-brainer to me.
We know the Seahawks, you know, John Schneider and Mike McDonald made it very clear they plan to add another experienced guard, even if that's a position the team could target in the draft. We've talked about this at length. Their strategy is they want to have at least a stopgap veteran at every position so they don't feel compelled to reach for them in the draft. And Van Roten would qualify. And presumably would not qualify is a compensatory pick free agent, which is the most important factor for the Seahawks right now, to not give up those fourth or fifth round comp picks they have coming. This I thought was an interesting one. On Wednesday, the Seahawks announced they'd hired Joey Lane to replace Matt Thomas as their vice president of football administration. There was no previous reporting that Thomas, who'd spent the last 11 years with the Seahawks, was headed elsewhere. He managed the salary cap and contract structure for the Seahawks. And I got to tell you, someone just randomly leaves a job managing contracts and the salary cap in April, like after all of free agency, that sends my spidey senses tingling that something's up here. I have no idea what, but something's up.
Wow, this is like, you're doing a full Windhorst here. What's happening? What's happening?
In Renton?
I don't even know what you're trying to imply, really.
I don't even know what I'm implying. I'm just saying it's a weird move.
The full Windhorst. What's happening in Utah? What was the thing? They traded Rudy Gobert?
Yes.
It's like, okay.
I mean, it did lead to them trading Donovan Mitchell, but yeah. But in that case, Wendy did know they were trading Rudy Gobert, as he's talked about afterwards.
I still am fascinated. Maybe we'll see what this leads to.
I have no idea, but what you're trying to say. Think it's weird that they have a change? Like, you turn over your front office at like the end of the regular season, but way before free agency, not a month into free agency, like 3 weeks before the NFL draft. This timing is very weird.
Okay.
Lane played that same role as Thomas for the Bears from 2015 through 21 and was the salary cap analyst for the Packers last season. So there you go.
We'll monitor the situation closely.
I'm sure we will.
They're gonna like trade down in the first round. You'll be like, there it is, called it. You'll be like, I knew something was amiss.
No, that's business as usual. If they trade up in the first round, then something is amiss.
You're like, what was happening with that? Anyway,
the team that has negative functional cap space changed its cap guy a month after free agency.
Okay. We end on a mysterious note.
I guess that's better than ending on the Seattle Swoon.
Oh, God.
Look, I named it. Hopefully it's going to stop it. The last time we did this, the Kraken curse landed us Michael Penix Jr.
That is true.
It landed us Kalen DeBoer.
It's a domino that leads somehow to Jed Fish.
But then the Seattle Swoon cost us Kalen DeBoer.
That domino goes all the way to Jonah Coleman.
It goes all the way to Will Nixon. Yeah, Will Nixon. On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.